off. Oh.
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
HaberHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery. New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93 at the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery.
We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, Lavinia is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Crusher Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
I absolutely love that opening. I love all these places we've talked to. I know I say that every time, but then every time I hear that again, I just love that.
it's cool because how long ago? I think in 2009 it was when you said the part about we were discussing calling different wineries and having them come on the show. And how many of those we've had on here? It's amazing.
It's amazing.
I mean,
yeah,
we've had the oldest. We've had some of the newest wineries. I mean, it's just it's great, and we're real fortunate to have all those guests on here, and sharing what they do, what their offerings are, and take time out, and we really appreciate that, and it's just been fantastic that going back so many years, it's almost like we thought I thought it'd be a lot of fun, and it has been.
Yes.
It's just, it's amazing. And it continues. And this
some
is
of
incredible.
The wineries, it's so much fun, though, because like you said, in the oldest one, we get Brotherhood out of New York. And next week we're going to be talking to a guest that opened up a winery on Memorial Day in Illinois. The range of wineries that we've talked to and the people and how they got started into it, and it's all for a common cause, all for the wines and stuff. And it's just absolutely fascinating. Speaking of the 16th coming up, which is Monday, it was on January the 16th, 2009, that we did our first All About Wine show.
Ah, yes. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Okay.
It was three years ago this coming Monday we did our first. We didn't call it All About Wine then, but it was our introduction show, and I think half of it was messed up because of sound problems, and the other half we couldn't connect, and just all sorts of problems. But that was our first one.
That must have been on Blog Talk Radio, right? Because I think we went back further than that on TalkShoe.
Yeah, on TalkShoe we went back further, but the first one on Blog Talk Radio was in 2009.
Wow. Yeah. Very cool.
And then, like you say, TalkShoe, we went back another year, I think, wasn't it? Something like that. Yeah.
Well, I did it when I did the best of the last time. That was the first show was on TalkShoe, I think, was in March of 08, something.
It's been a fun ride. And I'll tell you what, I have learned so much about wine in this country. Wow. I mean, the show has just been, if anyone, if you share this with your friends, you tell people about it and all that, you can't help but learn things about what's going on with wine in this country. So, just from the guests we've had on.
Yeah. And of course, my knowledge of
it's helped. Your knowledge has helped tremendously. Yes, because you always catch the questions I miss, and that's always wonderful.
No. I'm just pushing the buttons. I was never mind. I'm just getting the guests on the lines and, you know, pushing the sound effects and everything.
It's a very important job.
It's great. If you'd like to get on this program, speaking of getting on the phone, call us at 646-727-3235. It is, as long as it is Thursday, January 12th, around 7:05 p.m. when you're listening to this. Eastern Standard Time, yes, very good. Because we are talking about the West Coast, and they are like 3.5 hours different from us. I don't know what it is.
23 hours.
3, okay. sometimes the mountains kind of cuts the sun.
I was watching and looking at something the other day, and there is areas over in the Middle East that's like a half hour off. I mean, I know what it was. It was talking about when the new year came in, and they were showing some places over in the Middle East that came in on the half hour. I'm going, huh? But yeah, they're
now by Middle East. Are you talking about Kentucky, Alabama?
No, no.
Or
no, Middle East of the world. Yeah.
You know, oh, I got you. Oh, okay.
That, yeah, we are in the United States. You're right. Yeah.
Yes. We're like the Far East, and then we have Middle East, which is, you know, a couple of states over.
And then people are kind of the Midwest and the Southeast.
Yeah, we have the Midwest. Why not the Middle East?
Yeah, so, you're right. Yeah.
You know what? I think half the people just turned us
tuned
down.
Tuned out. What is it? They're not doing anything tonight.
It's about wine.
Yeah. What is this?
Could have audio problems and bring that back up again. So, very cool. We are still on Oregon today.
Southern Oregon. We're going to talk still a little bit more. And we'll probably be on Southern Oregon for another maybe 2 weeks because there's so much there. I mean, it just – plus we have a very special guest coming on. So
we'll stay with Oregon.
We'll stay with Southern Oregon for a couple more weeks. But there's some stuff I want to – I don't have a guest tonight because, you know, the people I called and all that were happy to talk for a while, but they weren't able to come on tonight, which would be this afternoon in their time. So it was events and stuff, and so I, you know, figured I'd just talk about wineries and stuff, and, you know, go back to old school, which we used to do when we first started in the United States, Arizona, and, you know, the A's. We used to just talk about the wineries after I talked to them and not have the guests. Now we're going to have go back to old school and do that tonight. So.
Good. All right.
But and then the program will end at 8 o'clock instead of 8:30. So,
and we'll have guests planned for next week. So next Thursday.
We have a lot of guests next week. Yeah, we have a guest from Indiana, and we have one from Southern Oregon. Illinois. And one from Southern Oregon. So. It should be fun. So stay with us. Don't give up on us. We're the new year. We're just trying to get our sea legs again here. So
cool.
But before we go into Oregon again, a couple of things. I found an article, a little short article here. I want to talk about just for a second. It says the U.S. wine grape supply is falling short of demand this year. Says after cool weather hurt production and quality in California and Washington State, according to wine broker Ciate, C-I-A-T-T-I, California wine buyers are seeking longer-term contracts to protect themselves against shortages. Ciate, a broker of bulk wines, reported on its website Monday. Spot prices for Chardonnay grapes in California's Napa Valley rose to as much as $2,000 a metric ton this year, from 1300 in 2010, the county said in this July presentation. So cool weather, it's affecting the hardiness of the warm weather grapes, which Napa Valley, and I've said this before on the program. In fact, I even mentioned it lightly last week when we were talking to our guest last week. Portia was on last week from South Stage Cellars. Here it is. Portia and I were talking last week, and we even mentioned that about how the Southern Oregon is able to grow so many different things and so many different stuff. And I mentioned global warming. That's just not my opinion. This is something that has really been stated by different authorities, more so than I, that the warming of the climate, and again, whether you agree or disagree with who or how or why the climate is warming, this is not a denial, but the warming of the climate is going to change the wine-growing regions in the world. Certain grapes have to have certain temperatures and certain sun days or certain warm weather days. And the evenings have to, you know, be cooler. Many people come into the winery, Florida State's winery down here, which if you're first listening, this is, you know, where I am. They come into Florida State's winery and they say, well, Florida can't grow grapes because of the warm nights. Well, yeah, that is part of the fact why we can't grow premium grapes, but not really. I mean, you can grow grapes everywhere. The warm nights are not very conducive to putting the sugar concentration into the grapes, and that's really what we want. We want that sugar concentration in the grapes, and as the nights get cool, the sugar concentrates into the grapes, and it makes for a better grape. I mean, all the way around for your final product on the wine. And so the cool nights is very critical, maybe, yeah, somewhat. Part of the French terroir, where the earth and the soil and the climate and everything make a difference. But the warm days and cool nights are ideal for a lot of different grapes. And I can go through Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir, Zinfandels, carrying on. I can go on and name quite a few of them, that the warm days and cool nights are really quite critical. Because of global warming, the days are getting longer, the warm days are getting longer through the season than the previous, and the cool nights are getting warmer in the areas. So the two bands around the earth where most of the grapes are growing are being moved upward in the earth, upward in the latitudes, upward in the latitudes. And so because they're moving up in the latitudes, Napa Valley and the climate in Napa Valley tends to begin a little bit warmer. Because the climate there is a little bit warmer, the evenings are becoming a little bit warmer, which also causes the days to become a little bit longer and warmer. And it's creating a difference. Cool weather, which hit a couple years ago, which stayed longer, again, part of the global warming trend. I mean, this global warming trend is not just the fact that everything's getting warm all the time, but it's becoming a shakeup of all the weather that we know. Much more violent storms and deeper snows and major droughts, and all this is part of the global climate change. Texas and their droughts and the heavy snows. Russia last winter had a horribly cold winter, and many people died from it, something we don't hear a lot about, but this is part of the global warming and the climate change, and that's affecting the grapes. That's affecting the grapes everywhere in the world. And so a cooler weather is changing it and causing grape shortage. Too warm of a weather could cause a grape shortage. Too warm of a weather could cause things like the glassy wing sharpshooter, which affects Florida in warm climates, to move further north and not be killed off in the winter, especially in California and areas like that. So Southern Oregon, and this is the area that we're in and everything, and see, there is a reason for me to do all this because we're not talking about Southern Oregon. Southern Oregon, they're saying, is going to end up being probably the next, quote, Napa Valley, unquote, type climate, because of the fact that they are just a little bit north. They're in the valley there. They're cooler evenings, warmer days, and it's going to move out of the Napa area and move up further north. They're saying by 2050, we may not know Napa Valley as we know Napa Valley now. By 2050, Southern Oregon, the valleys and areas that we're talking about there are going to be the areas that are going to be the premier growing regions. And along that same line, I'm going to talk a little bit about Pinot Noir grapes being grown in the Oregon areas and stuff. Pinot Noir is quite temperamental, actually. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Pinot Noir grapes there. But a long explanation for a short article there. But the global warming is affecting stuff. And again, it's not just me. It's a lot of people in the know, a lot of people in the business. And along the same line, we will be having a guest on, probably in a couple of weeks we'll have his interview on. He's a professor at Southern Oregon University, a leading, absolutely leading authority on climate and weather and soil and all that stuff for that area of the world. And actually, he's been all around doing it. So it should be extremely interesting what he has to say about the soil and about what might be happening to the weather and climate and all that. So we're looking forward to that. So that's in a couple of weeks. So be sure to mark your calendar and try to join us then, because it could be fun. If you have any questions for him, it will be a recorded program, so you're not going to be able to ask him live. But if you have any questions for him, then please email me or call us or something, and we will be sure to ask him the questions. But he is a major authority on climate, soil, all that on the West Coast of the United States, and particularly in Oregon. So it should be a good program. Again, any questions, email me or put it on the Facebook or have me contact you. Any of those ways, we can go to him and ask him questions. The program will probably air in a couple of weeks, though. Something else I want to go into, too, here before I start talking any more about Southern Oregon again. Another article I found, and this is really quite earth-shattering for all of you who are out there drinking red wine for the health benefits. All of you out there who say, yeah, this is good for me. I'm going to drink more red wine because this is good for me. This is out of New York Reuters Health column. And the University of Connecticut researcher, the one who originally came out with the study that linked aging and the substance in red wine, resveratrol, has been found to have committed more than 100 acts of data fabrication and falsification, throwing his work basically out the window. His name is Dipak K. Das, and that's spelled D-I-P-A-K, K, middle initial, and Das, D-A-S is his last name, or Das. I pronounce it Das. It could be Das. I don't know. But Dipak K. Das, who directed the university's Carter Vascular Research Center, studied resveratrol and touted by a number of scientists and companies as a way to slow aging or remain healthy as people get older. When he first came out with this report and a work he promoted out of the University of Connecticut in 2007, was that the pulp of grapes is as heart healthy as the skin, even though the antioxidant properties differ. At that time, in 2007, then when the report came out, there was a run on resveratrol tablets. The only company in the world that made resveratrol tablets was one out of China. That company sold out in the United States. I mean, it was unbelievable. Within a matter of 3 months, there was no resveratrol tablets available in the world. The study came out and people went, oh, wow, wow. And instead of drinking wine, they started to pop these tablets. They're saying now it's in grape juice and it's in a lot of other stuff. The university's interim vice president for health affairs said in the statement, though, we have a responsibility to correct the scientific record and inform peer researchers across the country that this is not all true. A lot of it was fabricated and falsified. The university said an anonymous tip led them to the investigation that began in 2008. Out of a 60,000-page report, and you can find this report if anybody wants to look it up, summary of it, it's available. If you'd like to check the summary of this report, it's available, and I will give you the website here, http://bit.ly/xkys4a. And that's the website. And this resulted in outlining 145 counts of fabrication and falsification of the data. Other members of the laboratory, the DAS laboratory, may have been involved, and they're being investigated, and the report continues, checking on to these people, too. So it's not over yet. The University of Connecticut has also just declined a federal grant awarded to DAS, an $890,000 federal grant, according to the statement, and has begun dismissal proceedings against DAS and others that worked in the office. University has alerted 11 journals that published DAS's work and has also worked on the case with U.S. Office of Research Integrity, which investigates misconduct by federal grant recipients. The journals include Antioxidants and Reduced Signaling, where DAS was one of the editors-in-chief, and the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. So some high-class journals out there that carried these articles, now they're finding that they had no basis for it. This says many of the scientists have been skeptical of various claims made about resveratrol. It has garnered significant commercial interest. Now, this is something else, too, after this report. GlaxoSmithKline bought Certris, S-I-R-T-R-I-S, a company that worked on the compound in 2008. GlaxoSmithKline bought this company for $720 million, but later discontinued the drug because they couldn't duplicate the results that it was given out by this original report. So they sunk $720 million into a company that basically doesn't do them any good right now. A Las Vegas resveratrol maker called Longvinex, L-O-N-G-E-V-I-N-E-X, Longvinex, has promoted DAS's research, and it appears in a lengthy video that they're doing, saying that it's great stuff and good nutrient, and it's the next aspirin hitting the market, which is quite a lot of claims, although, again, no basis for this. DAS also shared a 2002 patent with another compound in grape skins called proanthocyanidin, and he said that is to prevent and treat heart conditions. That is under scrutiny now, too. Other scientists have taken his work, citing 30 of his papers more than 100 times over the years, saying that these papers are good, and they've cited them in different reports and studies. And last year, DAS won an award from the International Association of Cardiologists. Still, one aging researcher said the impact of the fraud on the field will be minimal. There are many investigators who are working on resveratrol, said a Dr. Nair Barzali of Albert Einstein College of Medicine. He said, that doesn't mean we know the whole truth, but Rome wasn't built on Dr. DAS. Dr. DAS did not comment on anything, couldn't be reached for comment. He did state in a letter to the university officials that it was the investigation was a conspiracy against him. And he said the reports and the studies were repeated by many scientists all over the world. So it wasn't just him. And he said he has had a tremendous amount of stress in the last few months since these reports started to come out. And he became a victim of a stroke because of it, and he is ongoing treatment because of that. So it's, I mean, a little quick article here, considering all the reports and all the studies and all the stuff that people were quoting and talking about and everything, and all the resveratrol, I mean, you know, wineries around the country. We've talked to a lot of wineries around the country, and they've all brought up, I shouldn't say all, but many of them brought the health benefits of wine and how red wines are good and resveratrol, rather, and I keep saying that wrong, putting the V before the S, resveratrol, and all that. So it's something that, you know, it's out there, and it's going to take some time to correct this. Although the health benefits of red wine do not just rely on the resveratrol anyway, it also has a lot of other benefits in it. So, you know, we won't give up on it. But again, the article is really disputing a lot of the studies on that original one. I thought that was rather interesting. Southern Oregon. Before I go into Southern Oregon, I found an article, and I want to talk about this a little bit here. The Oregon Pinot Noir. Oregon Pinot Noir is probably one of the better Pinot Noirs in the world. It's well known. It's whenever you talk about Pinot Noir, two places you mention, Oregon being one and Argentina actually being another. If you're not familiar with Argentinian Pinot Noir, then by all means become so, because it is a phenomenal Pinot Noir. But Oregon Pinot Noir is very well known. It's been touted as one of the best that you can find because of the soil, the climate, and everything. It is rated highly in any contest, or anything. It is always one of the places that people always consider Pinot Noir. Although I found some great Pinot Noirs in Central California. But this article talks a little bit about Pinot Noir, Oregon Pinot Noirs. I found it quite interesting in the fact that it says that, talking about terroir, the French terroir. Again, there's no English equivalent to it. Basically, loosely translated, terroir means sense of place. Involving soil, climate, everything else. In the world of wine, it specifically talks about how the grapes are growing, the land giving it to the grapes, in part the unique characteristics to it. And the components of terroir include climate, soil type, and topography. The soils of Willamette, as it was pronounced last week.
Right.
Yeah, we still don't know. Portia pronounced it Willamette and put the emphasis on the AM. I don't know. I've always said Willamette. But Willamette Valley, the soil is an important part of the terroir, and it gives superior Pinot Noir grapes because of the soil in that area. And not just in the Willamette Valley, but also all throughout Oregon. The soil type that's the same in Oregon is just phenomenal for the growth of the Pinot Noir. They list, let's see, 24 different counties that are phenomenal for Pinot Noir growth and with soil that they've studied and tested in Oregon. The AVAs that are growing, doing so well in with Pinot Noir too, Willamette and the subdivisions within the Willamette Valley, the Dundee Hills is really making some fantastic Pinot Noirs. Also, not just there, but we're getting some also in the southern Oregon areas. The AVAs in southern Oregon also, and I don't have it right in front of me, and I'm not going to say it wrong, so I just won't say it at all. But Pinot Noir is coming out of there. Something that caught my eye, I do want to share with you, though, is that the Pinot Noir clones, type of a Pinot Noir grape or clone, is not a component of terroir. It is an integral part of the manifestation of terroir in wine. Okay, Pinot Noir clones impart unique qualities to wine. Therefore, clones are an important variable to the nuances of the aromas and taste and stuff. The story of Pinot Noir clones, if I may. Clones starts in 1950s. Pinot Noir clones started in 1950s. It, in response to serious wine disease problems, vine disease problems, a French scientific team led by Dr. Raymond Bernard embarked on a several-year quest to first identify healthy Pinot Noir and Chardonnay vines and then graft healthy cuttings to new rootstock. This was made because they were having some disease problems on the original Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays. After many years of monitoring these new vines as well as producing wine from these grapes, a series of disease-free, high-performing clones was selected and became available to wine growers. A similar, smaller program of clone development was carried out at the University of California at Davis also. Today, the number of Pinot Noir clones available exceeds all other varietals. So, I mean, when you start looking at the varietals of wine out there, it's a list a mile long. So to say that the Pinot Noir clones available exceed that is just, I mean, you're hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of different clones available. In the 1960s and 1970s, the early years of Pinot Noir vine planting in Oregon, clones formed the basis of vineyard development, not only because of the disease-free characteristics, but also for genetic variation, allowing selection for ripening time, berry size, cluster traits, as well as factors such as character and taste in the resulting wine. So these clones were planted to accommodate better to the climate and to the terroir, to everything right there in the Oregon area. The first Pinot Noir clones to be planted in Oregon were Pommard and Wadsonville. That's P-O-M-M-A-R-D, Pommard and Wadsonville, W-A-D-E-N-S-V-I-L, Wadsonville. The Oregon Pioneer Pinot Noir wine growers, and like David Lett, Charles Corey, David Adelsheim, and Dick Earth, planted these cones, and they generally account for the oldest Pinot Noir vines in Oregon. They are still planted and growing today. Newer clones, also labeled Dijon clones, include numbers. You're going to have a Dijon clone number 113, number 114, one called 115, 667, 777, and 828. These are the main ones. These six clones became available to growers in Oregon in 1989, so rather late. New clonal selections are still being tested. Okay, their introduction provides winemakers with new opportunities to develop and Pinot Noir wine lovers more opportunities to explore the seemingly infinite complexities of taste and character that are the hallmark of this unique varietal. So when you have a Pinot Noir, you're really almost not having a Pinot Noir because there's so many clones out there. I wonder if the original strain of Pinot Noir is still really, really available. I mean, that's just, it's not written here or anything. It's my own questioning. After reading this article, I thought, wow, what are we really drinking Pinot Noir? Is it something that's new, or is it still old growth Pinot Noir, or did they do so much cloning and everything that we've lost the pure lineage? It says, because of the diversity of clones used in Oregon vineyards, Pinot Noir lovers can do comparison tasting from single vineyard wines that are made exclusively from different clones. Of course, other characteristics of vineyards, such as soil, elevation, and microclimate, as well as winemaking styles, will also influence the resulting wines, but the clonal difference or selections may reveal distinctive differences in aroma and taste. To find wines that are produced from a single clone, go to the search page and search wines and choose a selection from single clone to find wines made exclusively from that clone. This is on this page I'm looking at here. What's it say? Where to? search wines. Let me see if I can find something here that guides me there anywhere. That one doesn't, that one doesn't, that one doesn't, nor that, nor that. So it doesn't do me any good to try to go to any of those. But, you know, I read this article here, and I'm thinking, what's happening with Pinot Noir? I mean, is it really... I mean, when you say, wow, this is a great Pinot Noir. This thing is just absolutely wonderful. This thing is fantastic. I love this Pinot Noir. But maybe it is a clone. And the clone might come out and present characteristics that aren't really found in the original Pinot Noir. So I'm starting to question Pinot Noir. Okay? I mean, it just... After reading, I mean, just one little quick article, and I've never heard of all these clones before, of all this stuff with Pinot Noir. And after reading this article, I started to think, you know, it just, and you don't have to really state that it's a clone because it's still Pinot Noir. Is it just I don't know. It's something I'm going to have to ask the wineries as we start talking to them. If they say, oh, I grow a Pinot Noir, I need to say, oh, wait a minute, we need to talk about this more, and we'll see what we can find out a little bit more about this. So stay with us. We're not done with Oregon yet, but these are just, this stuff is just stuff that just really caught me, and especially this cloning of Pinot Noir. More clones of Pinot Noir than there is all the other varietals put together. Varieties. It's varieties too. It's not varietals. Varietals is what it is in the bottle. Varieties is the type of grape, different varieties of grape. So, interesting. And we will talk about Pinot Noir, obviously, to these Oregon winemakers more and more as we go through this stuff here and try to distinguish and find out what's happening with Pinot Noirs in Oregon. Southern Oregon. That we are still in Southern Oregon. Umpqua Valley and Red Hills is the AVA. I was thinking about Southern Willamette Valley is in the northern part. We talked about the AVAs last week when we were talking about the Oregon wineries and the what they had to offer in the different ones around the state there. And I just lost my page I was going to talk about here. That's not it. Well, I'll tell you what, Mike. I'm going to let you play the thing and talk about the Wine Fest coming up this Saturday.
Oh.
And while excellent. I try to get back what I was going to do next year, which I just wiped out and I need to find again. So
okay.
All right. I'll turn over to you for a few minutes here.
No problem. There is a Wine Fest this Saturday at Florida State's Winery, and I'll give you the information. So, Ron, you have a minute and 15 seconds. starting now.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida State's Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flewn.com. That's corp@flewn.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And be sure to stop by Florida State's Winery. This month, the tip jar is for the National Kidney Foundation, the Kidney Walk, a great event that helps raise money for all sorts of kidney research and treatments. So stop by anytime this month and add a little something to the tip jar. All that money goes to the what I just told you. Like last month, the tip jar was for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital
And so they collected money for that, and it's fantastic. Visit the Wine Fest this Saturday, January 14th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Come out and enjoy it. It's going to be fantastic. We're a little bit on the cool side right now, but it's just going to be a great weekend. So stop on by, and if you're not in Florida, stop on by Florida. We'd love to have you too. So
yes, we would.
Yeah. Come on down.
Come on down. Yeah. Right. No oil on the beaches. No problems anywhere. Yes.
No, it's great. It's a wonderful time to be out there. So and enjoy the beach, enjoy some wine and everything.
And February the 19th, the baseball pitchers and catchers report. So spring training is going to be starting up down here. So that gives you another reason you can come down and catch some preseason games and come to the winery.
That's right.
Yeah,
fantastic time. Yeah, it's a good time.
So
did you find it?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Another thing, too, we're going to have a wedding at the maybe either tomorrow or Saturday, but we might have a little wedding going on at the winery during the fest. I had a couple stop in the other day, and they'd just gotten their license, and they said, so do you want to marry us? And I said, I can. I have my notary. And they go, you can? I go, yeah. And they go, oh, let's do it here. And so they decided that they'd do their wedding at the winery. And, just a middle-aged couple that, has been married before and all that, and they just – and I said, well, we got a festival Saturday. And they said, oh, that would be cool to do it then. And, and so we might have a wedding out there Saturday.
Wow, excellent.
Yeah, that's sort of cool. It really is. It should be fun. So I get to marry another couple Saturday. I've done weddings before, so.
Wow.
It's no big deal. No, but yeah, for me, it is for them. Yeah, I shouldn't say
of course.
That. I shouldn't say that. Yeah. I worked as a wedding photographer for many, many years. You can't make a living drinking wine. I tried, but it just worked. So I had to make a living doing stuff. So I worked as a photographer, and I did many, many weddings. I've done over, close to 4,000 weddings.
Wow.
And yeah, a lot of weddings. And I always wondered how many of those are still married. I think about that every once in a while, and I go, wow, I hope at least 50%.
Statistically, yeah.
That's statistically. Oregon itself, something I wanted to cover last week, and I didn't get a chance to do it because actually Portia was on the line, and I told her we'd call her a certain time, and we did, and I didn't get a chance to cover all this, but I want to talk a little bit about the history of wine in Oregon. Hit on the clock. We got about 15 minutes left of the we're going to do on the program tonight, but I just wanted to give a little bit more of a background on the history of Oregon. It has quite a history, actually. Wine has been produced in Oregon ever since it was the Oregon Territory back in 1840s. It skipped for a while, though, because of Prohibition and all that, and it started back up again in the 1960s. Grapes were first planted in the Oregon Territory in 1847, and they were recorded and established in 1850 in Jacksonville. Now, Jacksonville is down in southern Oregon, the area that we're talking about now. So it was in that area where wine came from. The state of Oregon joined the Union in 1859, so it's been a part of the Union for quite a few years. But throughout the 19th century, there was a lot of experimentation with different varietals and by the immigrants in the states and stuff like that. And then Oregon won a prize at the St. Louis World's Fair in 1904, which basically put it on the map for the whole country. They said, oh, wow, look at that. They're really doing something up in Oregon. But then Prohibition, as did most of the country, it stopped wine production in Oregon. And when Prohibition was repelled, Oregon didn't immediately jump back in and start making wine. They pretty much just sat around. And it was like 30 years after Prohibition stopped in 1932, and it wasn't until the mid-60s, early 60s, that wineries started to pop back up in Oregon. A lot of California winemakers came up to Oregon because of the climate in different areas there, and they put in grape vines. And a lot of these included the Pinot Noir because the climate. It was, a lot of people thought it was too cold to grow anything else, so the grapes they thought was going to be great out in that area. The state made laws to prevent rural hillsides from being turned into housing tracts, which was fantastic. This was done in the mid-70s, which really set it up quite well for vineyards when they said you can't change all these hillsides into a bunch of housing tracts. And if you're ever in California, Southern California, you know, in San Francisco and all that, you'll see so many of the hillsides are just full of houses and all that, and also landslides and everything else. So Oregon wanted to stop that, and so they did, and it preserved a large amount of land for vineyards. And then in 1975, Erie, E-Y-R-I-E, Vineyards entered their 75 Pinot Noir into the Wine Olympics and won a gold. The Wine Olympics was a world competition, and they won a gold in that. And then it's first international recognition of a in 1979, they entered their 75 in the Wine Olympics, and it was their first international recognition out of Oregon for wines, and they have been exploding ever since. It continued on into the 80s, and it continued to grow, and the AVAs were starting to be established in the 80s. The state grew some strong ties with the Burgundy region of France. The Oregon's governor paid an official visit to the Burgundy region, and a leading French winemaking family bought land in Dundee and started to do it. The early 90s in Oregon, the wine industry was threatened by phylloxera in the state. And we've talked about phylloxera. It's the little bug that gets into the grapevines and kills them, basically just, you know, chokes them out. It's a serious problem in untreated grapevines or in areas that are not planted on American rootstock, since most grapevines are planted on American rootstock, which is over the centuries has built up an immunity to it. But Oregon, when they brought them in and set them in there, it wasn't all ready for it, and phylloxera infestation hit the state. And so the winemakers quickly turned to resistant rootstock and stopped any further damage. And at the same time, the state legislature enacted several new laws to promote winemaking and wine distribution. They put a new focus on green winemaking, which is still environmentally friendly. They're still doing that a lot now. And AVAs were established by 2005, there were 314 wineries and 519 vineyards. And by 2009, the number of wineries in the state had increased up to 453, and it now remains the third largest in the country. They do make a tremendous amount of different grapes. It is just amazing the number of grapes that Oregon grows. I never realized the diversity of the Oregon grapes. The biggest growing grape is the Pinot Noir, which doesn't surprise me, but yet it does. Pinot Gris or Pinot Gris, I've heard it pronounced both ways, is the second largest crop of varietal. The Chardonnay is the third, Merlot fourth, and Riesling fifth. But what's so interesting is you can take the Riesling, the Merlot, the Chardonnay, and the Pinot Gris, and all those put together don't even come anywhere near the number of acres that is planted in Pinot Noir grapes. It's the Pinot Noir grapes have close to 8,000 acres planted, and the next one is only about 1,100 acres. So it's amazing. They do a significant amount of varieties, not just the French type, but they do wines, grapes from all over the world that seem to grow there. The Sangiovese, the Tempranillo, Zinfandel, the Tannet, along with Gewürztraminer, Sauvignon Blanc, Semillon, Amis, Bacchanore, the Muscat, Malbec, Marechal Foch, Gamay Noir. I haven't had a Gamay Noir in years. Wow. And they also do quite a bit of sparkling wines, late harvest wines, ice wines, and dessert wines. So Oregon is extremely diversified in their in the grapes and what they can grow and what they do. Just quickly, a few figures here. In 1995, there was 7,100 acres, or about 29 kilometers, hectares planted in grapes. By 2005, 10 years later, that had doubled to over 14,000 acres. So it is growing, and it's still growing. They're still just expanding like crazy. And the number of cases sold in that 10-year span is more than double. And so it is really exploded in that area there. Tourism is a big, big product of Oregon. The areas that we're talking about, when we talked to Portia last week and about the southern Oregon area there in Rogue Valley, the Umpqua, I should have asked her how to pronounce that, Umpqua Valley, and let's see, Rogue, Umpqua, Red Hill, Douglas County, all these different ones in southern Oregon, Applegate River, Illinois River, and Bear Creek Rivers, all these, Applegate Rivers in action, AVA, all this stuff and everything that they have to offer in different areas. Tourism is just exploding there. They have Oregon Wine Camp, or Oregon Pinot Camp, which is a camp that, let's see, I lost my page here, but it's something to promote the Pinot Noir in the state of Oregon. They have international Pinot Noir celebrations in there. It's just a phenomenal state for wines and grapes. We talked about California for a number of weeks there and all the stuff that California had to offer and everything. Oregon rivals them. It is just an amazing state, beautiful state. My wife and I, my engineer and I, have some friends that live up there, and they love the state. And they say it's green all the time because of the moisture and all that. Most everything in Oregon is on the western part of the state. The eastern part of the state is mountains. You're not going to find wineries there. It's all up western part of the state in the valleys, the Willamette Valley, and in the southern Oregon, the valleys there. So we're going to talk further about Oregon next week. We're also going to talk about we'll talk to a winery next week in Illinois. I know we've covered Illinois about a year ago, I think, something like that. But we're going to go back to Illinois next week. I had a couple stop by the winery. What was the last Friday, I believe it was. They stopped by the winery. And they just opened up a winery in Illinois, a little town called Carlock, Illinois. And they just opened up on Memorial Day. And they just husband and wife, and they said they had to get away. So they took a vacation and came down. They stopped by the winery, and I was talking to them and asked them if they'd like to be on the program. They said they'd love to. So we're going to go back to Illinois and revisit Illinois for a little bit and talk with them. Yeah. And let them make some comments about Illinois, and we'll revisit Illinois for a little bit. And we also have someone who's going to be joining us next week, Jim from Caprice Vineyards. I talked to him earlier, and he was tied up, but he said he will be more than happy to join us next week. So we're going to get him on next week, and we'll back to Oregon. So we're going to make a quick trip to Illinois and then back to Oregon. But again, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have ourselves a guest on that is really knowledgeable about soils and climates and all that. So if you have any questions or any comments that you'd like to make, Tim, please don't hesitate. Do it rather quickly, because we're probably going to be recording the session within, you know, a week or so. If you have any comments, any questions to us, get a hold of us. And I'm going to turn this over to Mike and let him give you all the All About Wine addresses and contacts and everything else. So.
Yep, absolutely. You can email your comments, questions, especially for our upcoming guest, to allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That's allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That goes to Ron, and he formulates stuff to put on the show. So, we'll ask the guests those questions. So definitely want to get those in real soon, because we'll be doing this fairly quickly here and then having it on at a later date, probably in about 2 weeks. So get your questions in for our upcoming guest now. And otherwise, we'll just ask him what we think. So,
well, we always ask. Or we'll just let him talk, because he knows a lot, so he can talk.
That's right. That's right.
For a long time.
His show.
That's
right. His show. There you go. And what else? I guess I can do the
Facebook.
I was just actually I'm on it right now, because I was looking at embedding the player on the. Yeah, I was looking at coding and all this kind of stuff to embed the player on the page. But so I'm getting that far with it. But go to facebook.com, like us on there, and it is facebook.com/ allaboutwinebtr. Allaboutwinebtr. No spaces. No, you know, underscores or anything like that. It's allaboutwinebtr, one thing. BTR is in Blog Talk Radio, and that is the show page. And you can also chat with us on there and post to the wall, and just like us on there. We want to get as many as we can, and because we know we have tons of listeners out there. Whether you're on archives, just, you know, a lot of people are on Facebook. If you're on there, like us on Facebook. We'd appreciate it. I know you're on there. Ron's on there all the time, posting updates of what's going on, and show information comes up there, and that's how I keep track of things sometimes. It goes to my phone. As soon as you post it, it goes to my phone, and I go, oh, that's what's happening. Okay.
Yeah, my bad. I'm sorry.
It's our source of everybody's source of what's happening on the show. So really cool. And don't forget the Wine Fest this weekend. That is 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. at Florida State's Winery. Give you the information here. Is located at 25241 State Road 52. That is State Road 52. You go I-75 to exit 285 and go west about 4 miles, and you'll see the signs for Florida State's Winery. You make a right. If you're coming from Suncoast Parkway, U.S. 41 or U.S. 19, you're going to go east on State Road 52. And whatever, you know, mileage it is, depending on which one of those roads you're coming from, you'll make a left turn. You'll see the signs. It'll be before I-75. So 25241 State Road 52 for your GPS users. It's Land O'Lakes, Florida. You can call the winery at 813-996-2113. That is 813-996-2113. Or email the winery at corp@flewn.com, corp@flewn.com. Visit the website for more information, upcoming events, and, you know, if you want to look at the wine list, everything's on there, event information, renting the place, you know, all that kind of stuff is on there. It's great information. It's www.floridaestateswines.com, floridaestateswines.com. That is the information on everything to get in touch with us. And like you said, next week, January 19th. Wow, it's already the 19th?
Already the 19th.
Wow, that is amazing.
I know.
Wow. It's like all these things I want to do before the end of the year, and it's almost the end of the year already. January 19th will be next Thursday. And like you said, we'll have at least two guests right now. And we'll be back in Oregon as well as Illinois. So and it's always, you know, we can, who says we have to stick to, you know, if the show's on Oregon, we can still have somebody else from, you know, some show that maybe they missed it because it wasn't in it wasn't a good time for them last time, and just because we're past the state doesn't mean they can't come on now, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, so anytime, you know, if you're out there, you're associated with the winery, you're like, oh, man, I was in Alaska and I couldn't get on. Well, you know, you can get on still. It's not a big deal. Oh, what happened? My timer just went off.
I know. It just counted down. 10 seconds. We're done. We're recording now.
Oh, we're
on
overtime. No.
Oh.
Well, you hear that. You hear that because you're the host.
Yeah, but I thought you heard it too. Oh, well.
No.
That's why I didn't tell you it was coming up because I thought you heard it. Yeah.
Nope. I look and I go, oh, that just went blank, and now it says, yeah, I see we're on. This is the OT part of the show.
Yeah.
What are you doing in sports? This is the overtime part.
Overtime.
Yeah, so great. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. And we will see you all next Thursday. Don't forget, send your questions to be answered on the future show with our special guest out of Oregon. It's going to be great. And just get it in there quick because they're
talking about the earth, the climate, the soil, all that stuff. So if you have any comments about that, by all means.
Yeah, he's for a climatologist.
Yes, he is.
Yes. There you go. Leading authority. So. Yeah, definitely want to get questions in about the climate and whatever else, how it affects the soil or the soil and all that good stuff. So let us know. Email us.
Yep.
And we'll see you all next Thursday for the show, again with Oregon, and we'll have a guest from Illinois as well. So that'd be cool. And we'll see you all next time. Thank you all for listening, and thank you, Ron, as always, and we will see you all next time.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, everyone. And we're done.
Yeah, we're done.
We'll get out of here.